Hello and welcome to the Monday, May 5th, 2014 edition of the Sands and its Storm Centers Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and I'm the recording from Jacksonville, Florida. We did get a lot of user submissions asking for our take on a new paper that caused some stir in the news that supposedly did unveil a new vulnerability in WPA pre-shared key authentication. Now, in this case, it wasn't that much a new attack, but maybe a more efficient way to exploit this weakness in WPA2. The problem is, like in so many similar systems, that ultimately it comes down to the user entering a password. That's the pre-shared key that you're using in WPA2, and that users tend to be not very good in setting up these passwords. Now, WPA2 actually does take a couple of countermeasures in order to prevent brute forcing, at least make it harder. For example, the minimum key length is 8 characters. Also, the actual key that's being used as an encryption key is hashed multiple times using the password-derived key derivation functions, which make it a little bit harder, at least more expensive to do the brute forcing. But of course, all of this goes out of the window if you do have a rainbow table. In particular with WPA2, the SSIDs actually used as part of the pre-shared key. So the SSID has to be part of this rainbow table. So overall, the current rules to deploying WPA2 with a pre-shared key still apply. Use a strong passphrase. Also, make sure that you're using a different SSID from the default one to make it harder to develop rainbow tables. And if you ever took a class that deals with exploits, you were probably told that you have to be careful with random exploits that you find out on the interwebs. Well, it turns out that there were about 50 to 100,000 hackers that weren't all that careful when they found an exploit that apparently was supposed to hack their Facebook friends' accounts. Well, it happened to be just one of those self cross-site scripting attacks where what you actually do is you post this JavaScript into your browser yourself and then allow it to run. The exploit itself isn't terribly harmful, but still makes you follow certain lists and users that you didn't intend to follow. And then, of course, you're asked to like the pages that are then spreading this particular exploit. As Symantec points out in its blog, the attack is not necessarily new. Similar attacks have been seen before, but it's still amazing that something like this still works. And there is, of course, nothing that Facebook necessarily did wrong here, because this is actually something the user willingly performs. And for a while now, we do have the Do Not Track header in most browsers. This browser advises a web server that you connect to that you wish not to be tracked by third parties. This, of course, mostly applies to advertisers. It doesn't include session cookies. Session cookies are not really considered tracking in this sense. But regardless of how you exactly interpret tracking, what it comes down to is that this particular header being sent by your browser is just advisory, and the server may just ignore it, and many advertisers do actually ignore this header. The Electronic Frontier Foundation now came up with a nice browser plugin called Privacy Badger. Privacy Badger will monitor various ads and such that are being included by third parties in web pages, and then it tries to detect whether or not the user is being tracked by these advertisers. If the user is being tracked despite sending a Do Not Track header, then this plugin will block content delivered by these sites. Interesting plugin, and right now just in a beta release state, but if you're concerned about the Do Not Track header not working properly, probably a nice thing to try out. And then we got late last week news about a new vulnerability in OpenID and OAuth. Not 100% sure how new the vulnerability is, but certainly this specific implementation of the attack is somewhat new, and it is a covert redirect. Typically, we're dealing with open redirects, meaning that a website would redirect you to any other website, which of course can be abused to phishing. In a covert redirect, it's more that the website you're being redirected to is open to an open redirect and then redirects you to the site that steals credentials or phishes your user ID and password. Problem with OpenID and OAuth is that tokens are transmitted as part of the URL and are then forwarded to non-trusted sites. A fundamental problem that I see with OpenID and OAuth is that it does heavily rely on redirects, and in some ways the user has to figure out whether, for example, a login page or an approval page they're being redirected to is actually genuine, and this is really more part of the protocol than an individual implementation. Well, and this is it for today, so thanks again for listening and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.